Shalom, Havarim. Hello, friends. Hello. Good to see you all this morning. Good to have the visitors here as well. And if you haven't picked up on it yet, this is my father-in-law's birthday month. So in this family, that's how they do. And he actually gave me a suggestion today. He doesn't give me a lot of tips. You know, he's been a pastor for longer than I have. Doesn't give me a lot of tips, but he did have a joke suggestion for today. Now, normally I wouldn't take any suggestions from my father-in-law when it comes to jokes. But because it's his birthday, I think I will share his joke with you today. He asked, and it's remember, it's his birthday, so please laugh. Be nice. His birthday was Thursday. It's his birth month, please. Do you know what the most important part of a horse is? The most important part of a horse. The main part. The main part. Okay. What do you think? Was that funny? Yay or nay? Come on, the people have spoken. All right, so we have been working for the last month or so on stories about the martyrs. And that was a fun series if you like death and gore and stuff like that. But I have a little surprise for you today. Nobody is going to die in this lesson. Woohoo, yeah. Nobody's going to die. Today we're actually going to get back to the main thing. So I can kind of tie in that joke. We're going to get back to the Gospels. And for the last few weeks, we've been talking about these stories about the martyrs. Well, we're going to focus on the Gospel of Luke, which is one of my four favorite Gospels. There's four Gospels, by the way. Getting back to one of my four favorite Gospels. And we only have six Sundays until we get to Advent. Advent is coming quickly. So we're going to focus on Luke for these next few weeks. Then we'll move the new calendar. The church calendar begins with the beginning of Advent, the liturgical calendar. So we're going to try to work through the liturgy and work through the common lectionary for the next few weeks. So that places us back in Luke, and I'm excited to be in Luke, or at least I was excited to be in Luke until I read today's scripture. And I read through this one before I passed it on to the worship leader and the song leader, and I just kind of scratched my head because this is one that on the surface, like, it sounds very straightforward. But then you start picking it apart, and like, well, that doesn't really jive with my understanding of who God is. And there's kind of this cringy interpretation. I'm going to use that word that's a technical word. You get it from the Greek. It's Greek for cringos, something like that. No. It's a cringy kind of translation and interpretation. And as I'm reading through this passage, I start looking through the commentaries. I come to a commentator by the name of Eric Fistler. He's a United Church of Christ pastor. He has this well-established website with all these commentaries on it. And I read Fistler's commentary on this passage, and the way he begins this, I actually sent this out in my church email this week, this established commentary on the book of Luke and chapter 18, verses 1 through 8, Fistler says, "I hate this story." Like, that's how he begins his commentary. And my original thought was, well, that's kind of a strong word to say hate. Maybe it would be better to say, I hate how people have used this story. I hate how people have interpreted this story. That's probably how I would do it, but at least he got my attention with that first line. I hate this story. But here's the thing. This story is in the Bible. This story is a part of the inspired Word of God. And more specifically than that, this story is in red in our Bibles. This is a part of what we as Mennonites and Anabaptists have chosen to focus upon. We put the words of Jesus at the top of our list. So when I say we're getting back to the main part, we're getting right to the words of Jesus themselves today. So I don't want to too quickly pass over this just because it's a little difficult. I don't want to too quickly move past this because it doesn't fit my understanding of who God is. And actually what we're going to do today is we're going to walk through this story, which Eric Fistler hates. We're going to walk through this story, then we're going to look at several interpretations, these cringy interpretations, and then I'm going to offer a different way of seeing it. And I actually believe that this other way of seeing it fits more our worldview, our narrative, and it actually is somewhat beautiful to read it in this way. So can you stick with me through all that? Excellent, because I've got you for the next half hour. You're not going anywhere. We lock the doors. That's not true, in case you were wondering. Okay, so looking at this story, we begin by there's three main characters acting here. The first is the person that we call the unjust judge. And it says in verse 2, the unjust judge, say that three times fast, the unjust judge neither feared God nor cared what people thought. Classy guy right there, the kind of guy you want to hang out with at a party. So there's this guy, and then we also have this widow. And this widow comes to the unjust judge. She has some sort of beef with another person in her community. They're having some problems. And she comes to the judge. She says, grant me justice against my adversary. Now, the other person, the adversary, never actually speaks in this story. But we know that this person has done something that the widow believes is unjust. So she brings this to the judge, and she comes back to him time and time again. And we find this then in verse 4 through 5. After she's come back to this judge time after time, the judge says, even though I don't fear God or care what people think, yet because this widow keeps bothering me, I will see that she gets justice so that she won't eventually come and attack me. I know, isn't that the weirdest part right there? I saw Marlene. I told you, the whole thing is kind of cringy. All right, first of all, so this is kind of like the kids in the grocery store. Anybody ever take kids to a grocery store? What aisle do you stay away from in the grocery store? Stay out of the junk aisle. Stay out of the candy aisle. Anybody have to keep your kids out of the cereal aisle? No. Mom tries to keep you out of the pizza aisle. Because why? Why would mom try to keep you out of the pizza aisle? Because you like pizza. Do you beg for pizza? Like you keep saying, come on, Mom, can we have some pizza? Mom, can we have some toys? Mom, can we get some candy? Mom, can we get the Fruit Loops? And then you just hear it over and over again. Until eventually, what do you do as parents? Danae's like, there, nope. You take them home. I must be the weak one. So when I go with the kids, after they've been, you admit it, right? Yeah. Right, after a while, I'm just like, okay, you can all get one thing. I break down just because I get annoyed with all of the asking. So this is kind of what's going on here. This widow keeps coming to this unjust judge, and she keeps badgering him. Grant me justice against my adversary. Day after day, she keeps coming to him, and he just kind of breaks down. Finally, if you will just leave me alone, I will get you the candy. Like, I will buy you the Fruit Loops. I will grant you justice. And not only that, you know, the part that Marlene was giggling about right here, the unjust judge is afraid that the widow, read little old lady, is going to come and attack me. Actually, in the Greek, it literally says something about blackening his eye. He's afraid that she's going to come and give him a black eye. So this big, powerful man is afraid she's going to come hurt him. So this is why, though, he gives in to her requests. And then the part that is very confusing, we jump to verses 6 through 8. This is the word of Jesus. He says, listen to what the unjust judge says. And will not God bring about justice for his chosen ones who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? I tell you, he will see that they get justice and quickly. All right, so again, we see that the only reason that the unjust judge gives in to this widow's request is because he's tired of hearing her complain. He doesn't want her to keep coming back. We also see that he only wants to protect himself in this situation. And Jesus is saying, see, God is like this as well. So this is going to bring us to our first, what I'm calling, cringy interpretation. And this first cringy interpretation says that the unjust judge represents God. The unjust judge represents God. So the reason that I have problems with this are multiple. And the first reason that I come to is when I ask this question. First of all, what do we call the unjust judge? What is his name here? What do we call him? We call him the unjust judge. Do you know why we call him the unjust judge? It's not something that I just came up with. Who names him that? Jesus does. So Jesus calls him the unjust judge. Now my question for you all, this cringy interpretation that God is the unjust judge, is can God even be unjust? Think about it like this. We all have our own interpretations of what justice might be. It's just like I had these kids up here. We tried to define things like trust and faith. Justice is also one of those things that is difficult to define. We all have our senses of what is and is not just. You know, Halloween is just around the corner. Imagine that you're out there, you're handing out candy. You've splurged this year. You got the full-size Snickers, the full-size Reese cups. Yeah, don't come to my house. You got the full-size ones. You're giving them out to kids. You're being generous. And some kid comes up and you give him the full-size Snickers. The next one you give the full-size Reese's cups to. And they're like, what? No fair. I wanted the Reese's cup. No, I wanted the Snickers. You know, they're battering. No fair. Well, you're like, I gave you more than anybody else is going to give you. Like, I was generous, and here you are complaining. You think I've been very just, and they're saying, no fair. Like, even these kids have this concept of what is fair and what is just. We all have this within ourselves, this ability to kind of discern what we believe is just and what is not just. But when the Bible talks about justice, it's not that we all get our own interpretation of what is and is not just. We base what is and is not just based on God. Ultimately, it is God who decides what is and is not just. And the reason that God gets to decide what is and is not just is, well, because first of all, he's God. And second of all, we find things like this. This is from Deuteronomy 32, verse 4. It's he, that is God, is the rock. His works are perfect. All his ways are just. A faithful God who does no wrong, upright and just is he. So it's a part of God's essence, justice is. We talk about God being love. We talk about God being just. God couldn't not be just. Got that? God couldn't stop being just. Just like God couldn't stop being love. It's a part of God's essence. It's a part of who he is. So when we talk about justice in the church, we always need to come back to who God is. Another reason that God can't be, you know, the unjust judge in this is think about the language that the unjust judge uses. He even says himself, I do not fear God or care what people think. Now, okay, that's kind of weird too. If this is God speaking, would God say, I do not fear God? Like, that's, okay, I don't fear Kevin. Except for some